Today's daf in Masechet Ta'anit, brought to you from Eretz HaKedesh, is daf Yud, and we're holding at the top line. Tana Rabbana, Eretz Yisrael nivret techila, v'chol olam kulo nivra l'besof. Shenemar, ad lo asa Eretz v'chutzot. So here we're going to see once again the interrelationship between Maaseh Bereishis and the Geshamim. And this time, it's in terms of the relationship to the gradual development of the Elam, in terms of beginning with God, with the Eden, and then the Gan, and then Eretz Yisrael, and then the rest of the world. And we're going to discover that it's obvious from the entire sugya that when we're talking about the reigns, and we're talking about the machlokas we had yesterday about Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, of the interrelationship of the rain cycle to the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the water, that all of these things are not really a reference to the physical processes, and that even the nature of the Geshamim, where we use the word Geshamim, is a general sense of the Hashpah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Olam, in which the physical rains, which are obviously like Rabbi Eliezer, are an expression of something deeper, because the Gemara obviously is going to be talking about all of the following issues in ways that to us seem merely metaphorical, and which to them are hyper-literal. So first we begin with Maaseh Bereishis. Eretz Yisrael was created before everything else, because if you take a look in the Pasuk in Mishle, it says, Ad lo asa Eretz v'chutzot. What's the difference between Eretz v'chutzot? Is Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. So that Eretz is Eretz Yisrael. Now, because that's the case, the interrelationship with the Geshamim is that Eretz Yisrael mashkeot HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'atzma. First of all, the big difference is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu first personally waters Eretz Yisrael. The rest of the water that goes to the rest of the earth, that is basically through a hanhoga. It's ayadei shliach. Shenema, hanotein matar al pnei Eretz, v'sholeach mayim al pnei chutzos. So here we're using the same lashon of Oretz v'chutzos, beautifully, and this is an Eov. This is not written by Shlomo HaMelech. But the idea over here is that we use that Eretz v'chutzot, as it's referred to by Shlomo and Maaseh Bereishis, in Eov, it becomes the reference to the Geshamim. So the Nesinat Matar is by HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. The Shlichut descending water, that's Al Pnei Chutzot. So we see that it's a completely different Hanhaga. Furthermore, Eretz Yisrael is the only place where there's really rain. So there, it's Shota Me Geshamim. What appears to you to be rain in the rest of the world, which sure seems to be a heck of a lot more watery than what we have locally, that's just water. That's not rain. Geshamim is basically that Hashpah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which incorporates the very idea of Geshem. Geshem is all of the physical world, right? That which is Geshem is Gashmiut, and that is really the reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midas, if you think about it, because if you have the seven midas of Zer Anpin, and you look at the iterated structure, once you get to the third iteration, you reach Shin Mem Gimel, which is Geshem. So that means that the lowest level of the midas that we are actually physically capable of feeling is Geshem. So we're talking over here about something that to everybody else is just a question of water. But over here, it's completely different. It's Eretz Yisrael that is actually Shoteh the Geshem. The rest of the world, they drink the Tamtzit. So basically, you have over here a little bit of concentration that was left at the clouds. If you, so to speak, as we say in English, if you water down the Tamtzit, right? So it's always called watering down. So you water down the Tamtzit, so you get what appears to be Geshem in all these other places. It's got a little bit of real Geshem in it, but it's mostly just watered down Geshamim. Sometimes you wonder whether we couldn't use a little bit of the watering down too, you know, but no, we accept Eine Hashem Elokecha Mireshit Hashana Ad Acharit Shana. Okay, so where do we see this? Because it says, Hanotein Matar Al Pnei Eretz V'Sholeach, then we have the Sholeach Mayim al pnei chutzos, right? Look at the difference. The matar, that is only al pnei aretz. And then you have water, which is watered down matar, so to speak. So in other words, it's only the tamtzit of the geshamim. Furthermore, Eretz Yisrael ishota techila kol olam kulo labasof. Another implication of exactly the same pasuk. Hanotein matar al pnei aretz, and then afterwards shalech mayim al pnei chutzot. Moshel adam shemagabel et hagvina. So let's say a person is trying to get together out of the way. He's trying to get all of the solids to put together into a cheese. So first he takes out all of the ochel, and he leaves behind the psolet. Now that psolet is very useful for the people who are marketing, you know, the protein mixes and so on. That's great. They got whey protein. But lamaisa, that's the tamtzit. And his meniach, for him, what he's looking for is the cheese. So therefore, it's Eretz Yisrael that keeps the best, so to speak, for itself. Anyway, getting back to what Rabbi Eliezer answered Rabbi Yoshua, how are we supposed to relate to the rain as coming directly from the ocean if the way that we experience the ocean is that it's salty? So Rabbi Eliezer says, well, obviously, when it evaporates into the clouds, it leaves the salt behind. Isn't that the whole point? So it's mematkin be'avim. So the salt of the ocean becomes sweet as it becomes a cloud. So how does he know that? Where does he see that in a pasuk? The Omer of Yitzchak bar Yosef, Omer of Yochanan. If you take a look, this is an amazing drasha. Rav David HaMelech wrote his Shira twice. I mean, we have two different versions of it. So one of the versions, that's the difference, by the way, when we say during the Yemot HaChol Magdil Yeshuot Malko, and on Shabbat we say Migdal Yeshuot Malko. So that's the difference between the Shira as it's recorded in Tehillim and the Shira as it's recorded in the story itself in Shmuel. So one of the other bolet differences is that we have in one pasuk in Tehillim, it says, Cheshchat mayim avei shechakim, the darkness of water in the thickness of the clouds. But then in that same pasuk, in Shmuel, it says it differently. It says, Chashrat mayim avei shechakim. And the chashrat is a reference to what it was that we said that the clouds do, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that they simply spread it out like a sieve, right? So chashrat mayim avei shechakim doesn't seem to make any sense. But anyway, according to Rabbi Eliezer, well, what's the difference between these two versions? So what we do, says Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, says Rabbi Yochanan, that you should, this is a play on words, by the way, which is take your palm and put it on your head. So it means take the chof and throw it onto the resh. As the difference is the chashrat or the cheshchat. So if we take the letter chof from cheshchat and we put it on the resh in the chashrat, and then we get hachsharat, because the chet and the hey are now usable one for the other. And therefore we have hachsharat mayim avei shechakim, which means that the water goes through desalination when it goes through the clouds. Perfect. So that is Rabbi Eliezer's raya. And what about according to Rabbi Yoshua? So how does he explain the difference in these psukim? Bani kroi mai darish behu. So he says, Savalaki adachios Ravdimi Omar. So when Ravdimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that back in Eretz Yisrael, Amri b'ma'arava, that the simon is, if you have cheshchat mayim avei shechakim, if the clouds are very dark, so it means that they have a lot of water. But if they're no huranani, if they're only chashrat mayim, then they have only a little bit of water. And then, of course, he falls back on his drasha that says that the ikar nekuda of the clouds, after they're getting the mayim from the node, so to speak, that's in the rakia, and they're being poured into the clouds, so the function of the clouds is to release droplets. Anyway, k'man ozva hodatanya. Once we're talking about the machlokas, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, which we've had so many in Yonim, in my Sibereishis, and in the Gishomim, and in the seasons, all interrelated issues. So who is the Brisa that says the following going according to? Mayim elyonim b'ma'amar heim teluyim. So when we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu being mavdo ben hamayim asher me'al harakia, hamayim asher mitachat harakia. So what supports those waters that are me'al harakia? That is supported by ma'amorah shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's simply the fact that this is the metaphorical pool that's in the middle of nowhere. And the peirotehem, what we see as rain, those are the peirot of those waters. In other words, those waters are not actually used, and they're never lessened by the fact that they're given that there's rain. They create the peirot of the rain that we experience as rain. Obviously, there's the only way this could make any sense is according to Rabbi Yeshua, who learns that the relationship that we're supposed to sense about the rain is this very relationship that the Gemara is talking about real rain versus the just water that we experience. So the peirot of those mayim elyonim, those are the geshamim, because it says, mipri ma'asecha, from the peirot of what you did, when you put, Kadosh Baruch Hu put the mayim elyonim in place, from the peirot of that mayim comes tisbah ha'aretz. But peirot means that the keren kayemet lo'olam haba, so to speak. In other words, the keren is never touched. So you have the principle that remains, and then you have the interest, that's the water. Obviously, that could only be going according to Rabbi Yeshua. The entire idea that the rain comes from the mayim elyonim is Rabbi Yeshua's concept. So what would Rabbi Eliezer say about this? For Rabbi Eliezer, that, he says, that's talking about, according to him, I mean, if the water comes from the ocean, what does it have to do with the peirot of the mayim elyonim? That is referring to the ma'aseh yadav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing to do with the rain. The pri ma'asecha is referring to the creation of mayim during sheishis yimei bereishis, and it's not talking about where the water comes from. By the way, you know that in actual cosmological terms, this is a serious question. Where the heck did all that water come from? And it's by no means a settled issue whether this was like actually water is built into planetary accretion, which is one possible chiddush. The other, as you know, most believe that what you're talking about is an incoming of water from the outside of the furthest regions of the solar system with comets and so on in the early stages of Earth's formation. So this whole idea is still a machloka, so to speak, in terms of the physical reality. Om Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kol olam kulo, mitamtzit gan eden hushote. So now once we're talking about these higher order interrelationships of what we call rain with what is really rain, and the idea of the shitim that we spoke about in Sukkos, and the way that there's some interrelationship of consciousness to the question of whether we really connect to the mitzias of what geshamim are in Maaseh Bereishis. So you should know that the entire world is actually only being watered from the tiny leftovers after Gan Eden. Shenemar v'nahar yotzei me'Eden. So the main river came out from Eden, and that river, where did it go? It watered the Gan. And then what? What about the rest of the world? So then you have these tamtzit, which a little bit of water gets down to what we experience as our world. Tana mitamtzit beit kur shote tarkav. So let's say you have an area of a beit kur, a place where you could plant, that's a kor is 30 saw of se'orim. So where you could plant that, the water that will run off, which is the tamtzit, you would have enough to actually go ahead and to utilize it for a tarkav. A tarkav is trei vekav, meaning that it's three kavs. So that means that it's the standard relationship. It's 1/60th. It's always echad mishishim. When we're talking about a tamtzit that is usable, again, the metaphor is always echad mishishim. It's like sleep being echad mishishim in Misra, Shabbos being echad mishishim. That idea of echad mishishim is what we're talking about over here. And therefore, we talk about it in the same way, that since we're going to see that the entire world is echad mishishim, so to speak, began Eden, so the echad mishishim, which is a trei vikav, three kavs out of a kor, is also echad mishishim. So that means from the tamtzit, there is enough water to be able to supply the world. Tana Rabbanan, If you take a look at Eretz Mitzrayim, it's 400 parsaot by 400 parsaot. Now that Eretz Mitzrayim is 1/60th of the size of Kush. Obviously, Kush doesn't mean the country of Kush. Could be it's referring to the place where the blacks are, or it's Africa, which is actually true, because even modern Mitzrayim, which is larger, is 1/30th of Africa. If you take a look at the square kilometrage of the continent versus the country called Egypt, it's exactly 1/30th. So it could very well be that this level is already a simple physical interrelationship. Kush is 1/60th of the size of the world. The world is 1/60th the size of Gan Eden. Now here already we're not talking about physical measurements anymore. The Gan itself is 1/60th of Eden. This is only the Gan in Eden. Eden itself is only 1/60th the size of Gehenna, which turns out that if you compare the entire world to Gehenna, it's basically the relationship of a cover of a pot to a large pot. So that's the same thing. It's Kekisui Kedera LeGehenna. Actually, others say, nah, Gehenna's got to be big enough. It's got to have no shear at all. V'yeshomrim, it's Eden that has no shear. Okay, so obviously, again, all of these are in the same sense as our Geshamim relationships. Omri Boshaya, Maidechtiv, when it's referring over here to Bovel, so it says in Yirmiyahu that we're talking about the upcoming wiping out of Bovel. So it says over there, Ba'kitzech, your end has come. Amat bitzech, this is how we measure the horrible things that you've done. And it calls Bovel the Shochant al Mayim Rabim. So you were sitting there, Rabat Otzarot, you've got these full storehouses of grain, and because you have the Mayim Rabim. What does that mean? It means Migaram Levavel Shihiyu Otzarotea Maleot Bar. Why do we have so much produce in Bovel? Have Omer Mipnei Shishochenet Al Mayim Rabim. It's because there are such immense water table in Bovel. The water table is right up almost at the surface, and therefore doesn't even need rain. So it's basically Shochenet Al Mayim Rabim. This is what Saddam Hussein said when, you know, the United States was threatening him, you know, we're going to cut off. Says, we've got enough dates to support ourselves forever. And if you hear the incredible riches before these countries destroyed themselves in terms of their water, these were unbelievably rich agriculture that we used to be in Iraq and Iran. Iraq is not as bad. Iran has completely destroyed their water. But the lakes have disappeared. The water table is down. You can't even reach wells anymore in many places. So, but at that time, and this was until very recently, I think that just yesterday there was a massive demonstration in Iran because yet another lake has totally disappeared, which, you know, has destroyed the livelihood of everyone in the area. So, as Rav put it, boy is Bovel rich. Atira Bovel. The Chatzta Malo Mitra. They don't even need rain. They can harvest their grain without a drop of rain. So because of that, they're not dependent on rain coming down from the sky. Omer Abaye, we have, in fact, a Kabbalah to that, that Tuvani Bovel is always like swampland. Tuvani means it's like you sink in it, velo yuvshani, it never dries. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says that this has nothing to do with the previous statement. Tuvani velo yuvshani is simply a saying that they say that it's good for people to live in an area that is Tuvani. It's better to live in Florida than to live in a desert. That's basically what it's saying. But it ain't very good, I can tell you that. Anyway, we're ready for our Capitan. Go for it. Now the question is, we talked about, that seems a little surprising on the surface, but it's not surprising at all. We talked about in the Mishnah about when we stop saying Vitein Talu Matar. But the question about when we start saying Vitein Talu Matar is still up in the air. So why do we do it in this direction? because the transition to the Taniyot is in terms of when it starts. So all of those different shitas that we had about the Revi'ah Rishona and the Shniyah, the Emtsayis and the Shlishis, they now are going to be Nogeya when it is that we should begin saying it. So the Mishnah according to the Tanakhama says, Bishlosha b'mar cheshvan, Shoalim et hagishamim. Okay, so then that would mean that if we're going according to Shita, like Rabbi Meir, that the first day, the first rainy day, is Shayach to be on the third of Cheshvan, so then that's when we actually begin She'ela. So the She'ela relates to the Revi'ah. Rabbi Gamliel, Omer, B'shiv Abba. Now note that this, remember we had the Gemara before, that said that actually the way Rabbi Yochanan was explaining it is that the next day after Shmini Atzeres is really the day that's considered to be Samuch L'Gishamim. According to which, remember the Gemara said the only reason that we don't ask for Gishamim immediately is because we want to make sure, as we're about to learn, that it does not destroy the Aliyah L'Regel, so that people should be able to get across Nahar Prat before the swelling of the river. So therefore, it would appear that this is not Negel Halacha. We're going to see in the end that we're Doche, according to the Rambam, we're Doche that entire Sugya because of our Gemara. And we don't Paskin like what we said before, that in the event that you don't have a Beit HaMikdash, you don't have to worry about Alila Regel, so then you should start being Mavakish Gishamim right away. So Bishlosha b'mar cheshvashamim et hagishamim, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, no. You have to wait until Shiv Abo, even though there's nothing wrong with having Geshem before, that is the rainy season, but we don't want to ask for something that will damage the Aliyah L'Regel. And this way, if you wait till the 7th, then that would be 15 days after Shmini Atzeret. And this way, that's the maximum that it takes people to be able to cross Nahar Prat. This is the way Rashi seems to understand it. In other words, obviously, people could live much further than that away in Barvel. But to get where they're going, they're going to have to cross Nahar Prat. So if the Gishamim begin earlier, so then the Prat is going to be swollen and they won't be able to get across it. So because of that, we wait until the 15 days later, which was really, it's starting actually during the time that they're at Nahar Prat, but that's not a problem because it takes a little bit of time, of course, till the river will swell. So it works out very nice according to Rashi. And this way, the last people are able to get across the Nahar Prat. Tosis understands it that the people on the other side of Nahar Prat didn't used to come L'Regel, but over here, the way Rashi's learning is Dafka the other way around, and it's fine. It works out just fine. Omar Rabbi Elazar, that's how we paskin. Halacha Karebangam Leo, and now, based on that, the Rambam paskins indeed like this, which is the way that we do it now. So we wait. We do it at Shiva b'mar cheshvan. So even though many are chaylik, many say, well, we paskin over Yaloch Kragom Leo, but that's only, like we said before, that's only where Bizman Beis HaMikdash Kayam, and therefore we have to worry about the Achrayim that are coming to Aliyah L'Regel. But Bizman Hazeh, that shouldn't be Nogea, because Rabbi Gamliel himself said, Kadesh Yagia Achrayim. So why does the Rambam paskin that this is true even today? And indeed, there are many Rishonim that argue and that say that we should not be waiting. We should start right away, like the Gemara said earlier. So this is the way the Ritva understands. We should start earlier. And Rabbi Zrachi Alevi, the Baal Mechomes, he understands the sorry. He also says that we should do it this way. So if that's the case, then what would be the explanation of how it is that the Rambam understands it? So there's a Ran who says, although I really find this difficult to believe that that's the Rambam's reason, but anyway, there's a Ran who says that even after the Churban, people continued to be Eilul Regal, and they said they wanted to continue to come to Yerushalayim. So it would still come to Yerushalayim, which means that once we were already continued to be manig this particular minig after the Korban, so we no longer changed it depending on the circumstances. And circumstances are really just circumstantial, literally. Tanya, Hananya Omer, But around here in Bavel, Begola, Achishim Bitkufa, there we wait until it's 60 days after the beginning of the Stav. So we have to wait until after the equinox. This does not mean the equinox the way that the Goyim are talking about, the real equinox. We don't even use, in determining when the equinox is, we don't even use the more complex Tkufa of Ravada. We use the Tkufa of Shmuel, just to keep things simple. And so therefore it means the way we would figure the equinox, which is exactly dividing the year exactly into four pieces. And therefore 60 days afterwards, which comes out around December 5th or 6th, depending on the time, that is when we would start saying it in Bavel. And Omer Vuna Barchi Omer Shmuel, yes, that's the halacha, that there's a difference between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. Now, this has given rise to like the most unbelievable mess-ups in terms of what do we do halacha l'maisa. I mean, because the Rush, it's a beautiful story in the Rush. The Rush was in Germany, and he was there was a terrible famine. It was a famous famine about 700 years ago, and didn't rain the entire year, not one drop of rain. So it was Pesach time. It was the night of the Seder, and the Rush gathered together his Talmidim, and he said, "Now is the time that we have to make it clear that we should absolutely not stop being Mazkir the Geshamim and being Mavakish Geshamim, even though it's Pesach." And this caused a tremendous uproar the next day when they did everybody. The other Rabbanim were saying, "What are you, crazy? This is the din. You have to..." We stopped them mentioning Geshamim at this point. Anyway, so the Rush wrote a little chibur, a pamphlet, in which he says, "I know that everybody's upset, and I want to explain my shita, and that the truth is this was an opening for me all the time. I always felt this way, not just now. I always felt that when we paskin like Hananya, it has nothing to do with being in Chutz La'aretz, not in the Gola. It means here in Bavel. Because since the whole idea in Bavel was that they don't need the rain and they live off of the high water table, so Dafka, it was important not to have rain in that early time in order not to wreck the planting by flooding it out. What does that have to do with here in Germany when we need the rains all the time and we need it during this period and so on, and therefore, okay, so everybody said, okay, but since the Geshamim are not really Nifsakim here in Europe, so because of that, we should just continue doing, but here we see that it is Nifsak, so I finally get a chance to assert my shita that it's ridiculous to apply this Gemara across the board and to say wherever you are outside of Yisrael, choose a date that is 60 days after the Tkufa. What sense does that make, Bichlal? Anyway, this became a big question, particularly Benogea, South Africa, in which many of the Peskim said that in South Africa, so then you should do it the opposite. No, I mean, so you should start asking for rain at the rainy season. It's if the seasons are inverted. So it seems a little ridiculous to just continue to do it the way that they do it in Chutz La'aretz, in Bavel. Why would you do it the way you do it in Bavel? Doesn't make any sense at all. So actually, some of the place who said to do this said, "But I don't want to take the responsibility until other people get together with me and we're ready to make a bezdin and say that we're all agreed on this." Well, that never happened. So apparently the minhag still is, you can correct me on this, you gentlemen from South Africa, but the minhag among the Ashkenazim is still to do it like Eretz Yisrael. Is that true? Because that's what's brought this forum.
Yes, in Johannesburg. The Johannesburg parallels Eretz Yisrael beautifully, just the proof they're not producing in Cape Town.
Right, right. Don't say that with your wife around, please. So there, as I say, there's different minhagim, and so there's also a beautiful story about the town of Aden in Taman in Yemen. So they have like a whole letter from the people that were there centuries ago that say that our minhag is never to be mevakesh geshem in the Birkas Hashanim. Whoa. So like, what's the pshat? Because they lived in these kinds of tents there at that time, you know, with the carpets and with the thick but easily washed away kind of coverings. And because of that, they said that if we would ask for Geshamim, it would be a tefillah that was a lie, because we don't want the Geshamim, because it washes away our homes, and we wouldn't be able to get, we wouldn't be able to live here if there were Geshamim here. And so what we do is we're mazkir in Shomea Tefillah, so that we shouldn't lose our connection to the rest of Klal Yisrael. So we mentioned the Geshamim for everyone else in Shomea Tefillah, but we have a minute not to be masking Geshamim in the Birch Hashanah. Amazing. Because we can't lie in a tefillah. We're going to pretend to believe something that we don't really want. How can a person say a lie to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Really very, very sweet. Anyway, afterwards, like about a century ago, so they were mefarsim that now they're going to begin saying in the Birchas Hashanah, because they built homes out of stone. So once they moved out of those tents and they started living in real homes, they changed the way that the original minhag had been for centuries, and they went back to asking the Imot HaGeshomim. So Lemaisa, those places, even those shitas that argue with the Rosh, those places that need Geshem, so there's two very important nekudas. One is that if a person made a mistake and he was mevakish geshamim during the Imot HaChama, when the geshamim are actually needed in his area, everybody is made that you don't go back and say Shemoneh Esrei again. Because for that much, we certainly rely on those who say that you're supposed to be mevakish geshamim during your own particular season when the geshamim are useful. Furthermore, you can be mevakish geshamim in Shomea Tefillah, even though L'maisa Chazal were koveya, not to say it in Birkat HaShanim. So that is sort of the way that we end up doing. But it's just like, it doesn't feel that there's been a fundamental determination of like, what does the Gemara really mean? So the minhag has become to follow the Rambam, and everybody thinks that that's absolutely a clear halacha, but it's not. But that we start being mevakish the Geshamim on Shiva, even Bizman Hazeh, where we unfortunately don't have Aliyah L'Regel, and Bizman Hazeh, even if we had Aliyah L'Regel, it does not take long to drive your Tesla over to the Nahar Prat. You know, you get there in a couple of hours. We shouldn't need to worry about 15 days any longer once we're doing it right, you know. So, but that's the way that we do it. So that the halacha is kechanani and chutzlaretz and so on. Any, is that really true? They asked Shmuel, who lived in Bava, when should we start saying Tein Talumatar? And he told them, when you see that they bring the wood into the woodshed of like the famous guy who's Tavut Rishpa, he was the hunter, Tavut the hunter. And that was, he was a rich guy, and they used to stock up for the entire winter. When he stocks up on the wood, then that means that it's time for the rain, because they're not going to be able to cut wood. So, I mean, how do we say that he paskins like Hananya? I understand. Do you know when that day is? And what's your question? Maybe it's the same time. In other words, maybe it actually works out to be Shishim Yom Achat Kifa, at Kufa. I mean, he's just giving them a local reference if they don't know how to figure the Shishim Yom. Do you mean to be Nechad Shiuru? You can't ask a question when you don't have the information. Iboilo. The 60th day itself, is that the time that we don't ask or we do ask? Is it kilifnei shishim or kilacher shishim? So how lemaisa do we deal with it? Do we save it in talamata or not? So if it's kilacher shishim, we would. Toshma tzimachlokas. Rav amar yom shishim kilacher shishim. Vishmuel amar yom shishim kilifnei shishim. So it's actually a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. And it's actually, as Tosis points out, that the minig actually is to be the way that we're going to pass in the Hilchasa, that the Yom Shishim is Kila Acher, and that we are actually Mavakish. But the simit to remember who said what, who said that we start earlier and who said that we start later, is that Lamaisa Rav, who says that we call it Kila Acher Shishim, we have to start saying it earlier, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. So the way to remember is the Simanecha is you take the high road and I'll take the low road. So who lived on the high road? Rav, because Rav originally lived in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara keeps talking about Kiyote Rav, Michiyote Rav Lebavel, from the time that Rav arrived here. Okay, so people who are on the high road, they need the water because of the fact that the water runs right down the mountain. Whereas the Tatoi, Shmuel, who came from Bavel originally, so he doesn't need the water. So therefore he says that we don't ask the day before. But the halacha says, Rav Papa Yochata, Yom Shishim Kalacha Shishim, we are Mavakesh, and as Tosis points out, that is actually the minhag. And now it is time for Sir Richard. And at last, the great moment of transition to the Ta'anit of Masechet Ta'anit has arrived. And so the Halakha Mishnah tells us the Seder, the beginning of the Seder of the Ta'aniyot. So now it's the 17th of Cheshvan. It hasn't yet started raining. So then itchilu hayichidim mitanim shalosh Ta'aniyot. So we have this three Ta'aniyot set, and only special people, yichidim, they are the ones who are mitane, not everyone. And the din of the, we're going to speak about in the Gemara, obviously, who these Yechidim are. And not only that, but these are not really all that serious. So they're not the type of Taniyot that are like the night before. They're like Shabbat Sibetamos or like Tisha B'Av. They're not like that. Like Yom Kippur, like Tisha B'Av. They're not like that. But rather, Ochlim V'Shotim V'Shechashecha Umutarim bimlacha. So first of all, you eat and drink in the night, not like Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, where you have to eat the day before. And furthermore, during the fast itself, so in other words, the fast begins only in the morning. And not only that, but they're allowed to do malacha, which you're not allowed to do on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. You're allowed to wash, take a shower, to use oil, put on shoes, tashmish amita. Now, suppose Rosh Chodesh Kislev comes, and there's still no Geshamim. So then starts the Taniyot al HaTzibur, which come in different sets. The first set that Beis Din is goes so that everybody has to fast is three Taniyot, in which, again, same halacha. They're kal. You don't eat during the day to prepare for them. You eat a normal supper, even though it's after Shkia and so on. So you're ochlin, v'shotin, mishechashecha. The next day you're allowed to do melacha, rechitz, asich, nilas asandal, tash mishamita, all the things that are usher on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, you are allowed to do here. Ask the Gemara, who are these yechidim that you say are the ones that make those first three fast? Omer Avuna, that refers to Rabbana, is it Tamir Chachamim? The Amar Avuna, these three fasts, these Yechidim, are mit'anim shlosha toniyot, they are Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. They're not on the 17th. They're on the first Monday afterwards. So it would start always on a Monday, never ever on a Thursday. Why not? Because if you start on a Thursday, then that means that people are going to be buying up food for two big meals, because they're going to be making a big breakfast meal after Thursday. And once already they're shopping, I mean, they're going to go for their shopping both for Thursday and for Shabbos together, right? For Thursday night and for Shabbos. So I'm not going to go twice. Because of that, there's going to be a big rush in the supermarkets. Now, when there's a rush in the supermarkets, the first thing that the computers show is that there's a sudden rise in purchases, which means that people are starting to hoard food. And if people are starting to hoard food, either they have information that there's a problem in the supply chain, or it's some kind of market insanity, but heck, I'm going to raise my prices. So because of that, we're very worried that if you do this, so then the prices are going to go shooting up. Masha Inkain, little variations that come on a Monday, by the time Thursday comes around, and there will be this buying, by then the supermarkets have found out that there is a tightness, and the Jews are going around and they're buying extra. So then they know that they are not in any kind of problem in terms of there being hoarding, and so they won't raise the prices. Anyway, but the question is, Maika Mashmalan, It's a Beferisha Mishnah that we're going to have later on. It's a Beferisha Mishnah that all of the Taniyot are Sheni v'Chamishi v'Sheni. So like, what is Ravuna's Chiddush? Doesn't it say, Tanina, Ein Gozrin Tanit al HaTzibur b'Tchila b'Chamishi, Shelo l'Havkia et HaSharim. We never start on a Thursday because we don't want the prices to shoot up. By the way, it's very cute. The word l'Havkia. So the word l'Havkia has come to mean, because of this Mishnah, to just allow a rise in prices. But the word itself, l'Havkia, means to get rid of, right? M'Havkia something is to throw it out. So Rashi explains that this is the idea of the new-sized 5 cents Hershey bar. Because there's two ways to raise your prices. You repackage things and you sell them at the same price in the brand new beautiful packaging, which has 25% less in it. And that's mafkia. Mafkia means they'll throw out all the old containers and they'll repackage things so that people think they're paying the same amount until they look more carefully at the label, in which, because only because of the law do you have to say, this used to contain 700 milliliters, but now it contains only 480, and so on. Okay, so that's the beautiful lesson of Lavkia. Bottom line is obviously that you're raising your prices, but it turns out that this idea of the repackaging, in which suddenly the oddly shrinking chocolate bar is actually Marumas in the Gemara's Lashon, which is just like very cute. So why do we need Rav Huna? Anyway, that's the bottom line. If the Mishnah says Beferish that it's only a Sheni v'Chamishi Sheni, and the answer is obvious. The Mishnah says that Ein Gozrin Tanis Alat Sibur, on a Yom Sheni, never on a Chamishi. Why? By the way, Sheni v'Chamishi Sheni, the Gemara doesn't explain why, it explains only why not on a Thursday. But that it's Monday and Thursday, that's a given by the Medrash because of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to be Mekabel Luchei Shniyim on a Thursday, coming down on a Monday, and so therefore these are Yomim of Rachamim. That's a given. So the question was only, is it Monday, is it Bahab, or is it Haba? That's the only question. But it's definitely going to be Sheni v'Chamishi. So what do we need? The answer is obvious. That's a Tzibur. And that, as we said, is because we're afraid of food hoarding, that people are going to think that there's a run on food and raise prices. But if you're talking about Yechidim, I mean, you're talking about a small percentage of the population that's going to be doing a little bit of extra shopping. So you would have thought that the Mishnah, as the Mishnah says, Ein Gozrin Gzeirah al HaTzibur, is only a din on a Tzibur. But on Yechidim, it's irrelevant. Kamashman comes along, Rav Huna, to say that it's exactly the same thing, even though it's Yechidim. Once we make this takona, like many things, as we've spoken about so many times, that there are multiple reasons for the ways that things are given by the Chachamim, and that the simple explanations and so on is never all of the story. And even though this sounds to us to be, the truth is, think about the way you deal with your own children. You never tell them the whole story, right? You give them some reason for the way a particular anhaga of yours is, the way you want the family to be. There's a million other things that you're taking into consideration that you cannot share with the children. And the same thing is true over here. There's so many complex interrelated phenomena that you have to take into consideration in every one of these moves that have societal impact, in which one thing connects to other things, and things are so deeply, deeply and subtly interconnected. Because I'll tell you one thing, come along, Rav Huna, don't think that it's only a din in the Tzibur, it's also a din in Yechidim. Tanya Nami Hachi, and there's actually a Braisa that explains things exactly like Rav Huna. Kishitchilu ha-Yechidim li-Yitanotz, even though we're talking about individuals, it's also a Sheni v'Chamishi v'Sheni, and this adds to the Mishnah. U'mafsikin b'roshei chodashim. Now, if one of these Taniyot comes out on Rosh Chodesh, so then you would have to actually stop, and you'd have to cut it out because you don't want to, you know, fast actually on a Rosh Chodesh. I mean, when would such a thing happen? It was very simple. If Shivasa B'mar Cheshvan is a Monday, so then the next Sheni, in other words, the last bays is going to come out on Rosh Chodesh. Truth is, however, that is not as simple as it seems, because there's a machlokas about Rishonim, about whether Shiv Asar means on the 17th or from the 17th. So do you actually fast on the 17th? But the only way that this comes out is that Rosh Chodesh would work out is if you fast on the 17th. So, okay. But anyway, so you would stop. And if there was one of the Yomim Tovim that are in Megillat Ta'anit, now this is only Nogea, then while they were still being Noeg Yom, the Yomim Tovim and Megillas Ta'anit. Today, the only Yomim Tovim and Megillas Ta'anit that were Noeg is, of course, Chanukah of Purim. Tana Rabbana. Al Yomar Adam Talmidani. Person should not say, I'm not Rabbanan. I'm just starting to learn. You know, I'm just a Talmud. I'm not a Talmud Chacham. Any Ra'ui Layot Yachid. I can't view myself as being a distinguished person who's going to be doing the tiny oat that only special people do. Don't say that. Everybody who's learning Kolti Bidei Chachamim are included in the Yechidim, and you should fast. Okay, that is a machlokas, because there's some Rishonim who learn it means he can fast. Doesn't mean he must fast. Because we're going to see later on that there's a problem of mirzek yura. It looks like you're stuck up if you act as if you're one of the Yechidim, and you're not really roy to be Yechidim. So even though you'd say, am I harming anybody in fasting? Yes, you are. Because by making yourself appear even to be arrogant, you are destroying the interrelationships among people in Klal Yisrael. And that is an iser. San Rashi understands it, the mirzei kiyura. It's not just that people usually think the mirzei kiyura means that it seems to be an expression of some arrogance within you. And that's not the point. Even if it isn't, and it's entirely l'shem shamayim, you just want to fast, and you're sensitive to the kishamim, but since it looks like arrogance to others, ipso facto, it's wrong. Not because stam of chashash, like in other things, but rather because it actually is destructive of the way that people are meant to interrelate. So because of that, the Ritva, for instance, he learns over here that this is a heter, not a chiyuv. And you shouldn't think it's also to fast, kamash malan. You can also fast. Okay, fine. I mean, the poskim say that he's b'chuyev to fast this. So who exactly, we're talking about these two words, I'm just a Talmud, I'm not a Yochid. So who is considered to be a Yochid and who is considered to be a Talmud? So a Yochid means somebody who's roi lemanoto parnas ala tzibur. He can be a pesek for the entire tzibur. He can be the rav of the community, which means that anybody can come in and ask him a question, la halacha, and he can deal with that question. A Talmud is somebody who, if you ask him a question on what he's learning, specifically, that's the one thing he's involved in, and he can answer you. Less than that is not considered to be the Talmud either. So Talmid is kosher shalim otod v'alocha, at least belimudo, and he can tell you. And this would be afilu v'sechetz kala. Even if the only thing that he knows is right now, there's different ways of learning this. This is the way that I prefer. But is that even if right now it's the middle of the kala, which means the time in which everybody comes together to hear the shiurim that are given in public, so they select the small masechet. Doesn't mean it's a masechet kala. It's a masechet that you're learning in the kala. There is a masechet kala, which is the brayta of the dinim of kala. But so this would mean if he's less than that, so then he's not able to give you a psak on anything. So then he's not even considered to be a talmid. Tana Rabbanan lo kol rotzeh la'asot atzmo yachid oseh talmid oseh. Again, I'm reading it according to Rashi's preferred way of reading it. The other way of reading it, lo kol rotzeh la'asot oto yachid oseh, but talmid oseh. If he's a talmid, then he can make himself like a yachid, which is basically the way the Ritva was understanding. It's a heter. You can, but you don't have to. But Rashi's preferred reading is, there's two different dinim. There's the din of a yachid, binogei the tainyas, and then there's a din of a talmid. What is a talmid? A talmid is somebody who's pretending to be a yeshiva bocher, and therefore he has the right to wear a black hat, and he has the right to look like a slob, and so on and so forth. So those special things that the Gemara it actually does mean the black hat thing. So anyway, there's a special dinim that are said about talmidim, and what it is that they can wear to show their status as being Talmidim in the Chachamim and so on and so forth. So that's what it means. If you want to make yourself a Talmid, you can't do that either. You have to be really Ro'oi, even to be a Talmid. So that would be Lo Kol Rotzeh La'asot Atzmo Yachid Oseh, and Lo Kol Rotzeh La'asot Atzmo Talmid Oseh. So says Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi says, why not? Oseh V'zachor L'tov. I mean, a guy who wants to fast, you know, it's not as if he's like making anything really, he's having a lot of fun out of it. V'shein Shevach Hulo V'tzar Hulo. You don't really get anything out of the fasting. It's basically a pain. But, I mean, nobody's going to think that that's yura. It's just that you care. Tanya Yidach, there's a brayta that says, Lo kol rotzeh la'asot atzmo yachid oseh, or talmid oseh. Devi Reb Shimon ben Elozer, because of Mirziki yura. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel omer, that's only true by medvorim amurim. V'dovar shel shevach. So, yes, wearing the black hat for the Talmud, that's true. You're trying to show off, you're not allowed to do that. Av bedover shel tzar, but benogea, the fasting of the yochid, why not? Oseh v'zochel atov, it's very sweet that he cares, and he wants to add, she'en shevach alo, ela tzar hulo. Tana Rabbana, supposing somebody was fasting about a tzara, and the tzara passed, either the guy actually died, or it was nisrape, Alacholev and Israp, obviously his Tarsetti could have actually died, or suppose it was the Geshamim and it started raining. So the halacha is that anyway, Hareze mitane umashlim. Once he was makabal the tainis, he's mashlim the tainis. Somebody who goes from a mokum she'in mitanim, la mokum she'mitanim, we always give a person the chumras of the place where he's in. He should be misane with them. If he left from a place where they are misanim, and he came to a place where they're not misanim, he should always go chumras hamakom shehalach l'sham. So he should keep the tainis with them. Hareze mitanem umashlim. Now suppose he forgot that it was a tainis and he ate. Al yitra'er bifnei tzibur. He shouldn't show himself in front of the public as somebody who's feeling like really fine today and he's not keeping the tainis. Va'al yanig idunim atzman. If he's alone, it doesn't mean that he should now sit down and have ice cream, you know, have yourself a delicious ice cream cone. Shenemar, Yomer Yaakov Levanav, Lama Titra'u. This is like very well placed. So Yaakov says to his children, what are you showing off for as if you have food? Everybody else is running down to Egypt buying food. So they're telling Yaakov, we don't need any food. We've got tons of food. Yes, but the neighbors are then going to know that you've got tons of food. You don't want to do that. Al Tar'u Atzmachem Kishatem Sveim. Don't seem to have enough. Lo bifnei Esav, v'lo bifnei Yishmael. It's the last thing you need is that they start saying that the Jews have cornered all the food and so on. Kedei shelo yitkanu b'chem. So even though the family had plenty of food, Yaakov sent them down to Mitzrayim. And then when he told them, al tirgezu b'dorech, so what's the meaning of al tirgezu b'dorech that Yosef tells them? Omar Rabbi Elazar, Yosef told his brothers, don't be oisek in learning when you're walking, because you're going to end up getting so involved that you're going to lose your way, and all of a sudden you're going to find yourself in area A, and who knows what's going to happen, especially if you're listening to Waze. So Shemetir Gezu Alechem Aderech, this is what happened to people, this literally happened to people, when Waze says make a left turn and drive off a bridge right into the ocean. Things have happened. So people are like involved. You're used to just listening to what Waze tells you to do. God help us, right? Ask the Gemara, what? Didn't Rabbi Loi bar Brachya say that Shnei Talmidim Chachomim or being Mahalach Baderech, and they're not learning, are Roy to be burned to a crisp? Ruyin Lisaref? We learn this out from the story of Elio and Elisha. It says, Vayi Hema Holchim. Strangely enough, it says, there they were walking, Holoch Vidaber, sitting and talking. I mean, sitting, what do you mean sitting and talking? Walking and talking. What do I need to know what they were doing? I understand we want to say that one of them is smoking a pipe. I mean, I just say they're walking, right? Ah, because the point is that the Inei Rechav Eish V'susei Eish come V'yafridu Ben Shneim, we need to know that they were talking and learning, because otherwise, time at Ikadiba, it's only because they were talking. But if there hadn't been Divrei Torah, they would have been burnt up. So Leka Dibur ruinly sarayt by the Rechav Eish. So how can we say that Yosef told his brothers, maybe one of them to be burnt up? So how could he have told his brothers, don't be learning on the road. No, it depends what you're learning. Lokasha. Hola migra sola iuni. What Rabbi Loi was saying, that's talking about that you should at least be talking about things that you don't get into fights over. Just going over the words of the Mishnah, you're chazering the Rambam or whatever. There, you're not going to get into fights. But to be ma'ayin in the sunya, you generally, you get all involved and you lose your concentration about where you're going and you'll end up listening to ways. B'mat nita tana. Baraisa says that's not what he told them. He told them not to learn. He told them not to take giant steps. So al tafsiu psia gaza, just in case you're going to be playing games along the way, take three giant steps. Don't take any giant steps at all. Why is that? The al tafsiu psia gaza, because basically it's in the Baraisa. Al tafsiu psia gaza means the omar mar psia gaza notelet echad mechamesh meot mimorei nafshal adam. If you take a giant step, it takes away 1/500th of your vision. And Tosis explains that that's just the first giant step, you know. So be careful not to take that first giant step. If you can manage to take the second giant step without taking the first giant step, then it would be okay. V'achnisu chamala'ir, and make sure that you are in the city when the sun is going down. K'revyin amarav, the Yom Revyin amarav, lo'olam yetze adam b'chi tov, v'yar Elohim et ha'or ki tov. Light is good. So a person should always go out in the morning only when it's good, meaning only when there's light. And he should come into town, make sure that he arrives at his hotel while it's light. Yikanes b'kitov. Shenemer ha-boker or ve'anashim shulchu. Omer avira omer avichia. Hamitalech baderech. Somebody who's walking along, he should not eat more than he would if it were a year of famine. We're going to see later on that is only a small amount of food. What's the reason? So, Hocha Tirgumu over here in Bavel, they say it's because you can end up getting diarrhea and you'll have a lot of problems with your tummy if you start eating while you're walking. And in Eretz Yisrael, they say because you have to be careful that you're going to have enough food till, because you never know if there's going to be a delay. Might be Nayo. The difference is very practical. Ika be Nayo, Diyasiv Ba'arba. Suppose you're on a ship. So you're not walking. You don't have to worry about how the walking is going to be harming your tummy. But you do have to worry that you're not going to have enough food if there's a delay. Inami dekazem avna lavna. Or you've got the whole route worked out. And you're going from one hotel to the next hotel. And they all have dining rooms and there's no problem. So then you don't have to worry about not having enough food. But you will have to worry about getting sick. Rav Papa, who was very fat. So Rav Papa, ko parsa v'parsa, ochil choda rifta. Every parsa that he walked, he took another sandwich. Well, that would fit in with that beer belly that he was so proud of. And he held that the only reason is because of stomach problems. And he said, man, with my tummy, there ain't ever problems. Because of that, he actually paskin, you can eat a sandwich on every parsa. Okay, we'll continue this. Pup is always so much fun.